Doug and Jess, just literally seconds away. Be the 10th caller now to win a gift certificate from Sorgles in Wexford, 412-922-1020. To join Doug and Jess, 866-391-1020. Doug Oster, everybodygardens.com, and Jessica Wallace are both from that brand that is the Tribune Review. Good morning, Doug. Good morning, Jess.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Wallace.
It's all over.
What's all over?
It's all done.
Oh, the season?
Finally lost my begonias to the cold.
Yeah. I lost a lot of things to the cold. This was there were some cold nights this week. It was a bit like January in some ways.
Yeah, it was.
But we had a long season. Like, this fall was long, I feel like.
Yeah, it was great. I was telling you before we came on, I bought these begonias at Hahn for 99 cents a flat. I think it was in August. Stuck them in bunch of containers, which I hadn't planted yet, and, you know, just lost them a couple days ago. So that was, you know, a good 3 months out of them at a bargain, and they look great there. They loved it, and I'm not the biggest fan of those, like, normal begonias.
Like the wax begonias?
Yeah, but they worked good for there.
Yeah, and the deer don't eat them, so that's usually the deer don't eat them.
And also, before we came on, Jessica was telling me a tale of woe for the with the deer. Oh, it's so awful.
I looked out the window the other day, and there's an 8-point buck standing right off of the patio.
No, was that didn't Ty tell you that there was somebody?
Well, he's fond of telling me when there's a deer in the yard. He's like, Mom, there's a friend in the yard. Oof. And I'm like, argh. Yeah, we've had a lot of deer in the yard this fall. So we've, like, all the little trees, our fruit trees and stuff are all fenced in now in the vegetable garden. I did manage to save a little bit of kale from them, so I put some netting over the top of that. But they ate the chard and the spinach and the lettuce, and they uprooted my fall lettuce crop just when it was ready to be harvested. Oh. So I know. It's really frustrating. But then obviously they're hungry, so – but – yeah.
What?
I know. I need to get a taller fence around the vegetable garden. I think that's the lesson.
The bucks, too, when they're chasing,
I
get worried. I had one right at the house, and I went out there, had the dog on the leash barking, and this buck was just looking at me like, are you a rival or what are you?
Mm.
You know, and I was like, it really wouldn't move, you know?
Hmm.
It was a Mexican standoff.
Who won? That's what I want to know. The dog.
We went back inside.
Probably a smart decision.
Well, yesterday I planted 600 bulbs.
Good for you.
And I made a little video, a silent film.
Okay.
That I just posted this morning, and it's pretty fun.
I saw your Facebook story with your drill and the auger on the end planting bulbs.
It was, probably took 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
Real easy with the tulips, putting those in the vegetable garden, but
okay.
You know, the woods, you know, that's where it's tough to drill. And that was 200 daffodils went in there, and then the other 400 bulbs went into the vegetable garden, which is a little easier. But I still have more coming, believe it or not. I still have some more bulbs coming, but the biggest chunk are planted.
Well, whoever owns your house after you do, I hope they appreciate it.
You
retire and move to, like, Bali or something.
They won't. They'll just take the weed whacker out there and say, what are these? What are these yellow things?
I hope that's not the case, because you've got tens of thousands of them.
I was actually thinking about that. It, you know, would have to be the right person. You know, I could see them, you know, cutting. I'm putting in some really nice shrubs. You know, every year I'm adding something. I'm trying to fill the woods up with interesting things. But who's going to know, you know, like, who's even going to see a sourwood or an American hornbeam or a coosa dogwood or, you know, a heptacodium?
You need a plant nerd like you and I to come in there and, yeah. Well, or you could just live in that house forever and ever and
probably,
then you don't have to worry
probably,
about it.
That's probably the way it's going to go. You know, big, giant, old 1939 Tudor for two people.
Yeah.
And two dogs.
Yeah. The dogs need a lot of room. They each need their own bedroom,
three chickens.
Right? Each need their own
Maybe
bedroom.
We should get an indoor area for the chickens.
An indoor chicken run? That would smell real great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, no, I mean, the deer have been very problematic, but there's also been a lot of great about the fall garden. And one of the tasks that I did on Friday was I emptied all my containers. I have a lot of big glazed terracotta pots that are pretty expensive, so I move them all into the shed for the winter so they don't crack.
How did you do that?
So we have the tractor cart you know, that goes on the back of the tractor. So I shovel all the dead plants and old soil into the tractor cart, and I dump that on our compost pile. And then I put the pots into the tractor cart, drive the tractor cart up to the shed, and unload
Every pot is liftable?
Yeah. Wow. They're heavy, though. I mean, I've got some big ones that are pretty heavy, so it might be a couple more years I won't be able to lift
them.
And
awkward. Awkward thing to move.
And I use the hand truck, too, for a lot of them. Like, when I bring them down in the spring from the shed, it's downhill, so I can use the hand truck for that.
No, it's a two-man job, but I love that pot lifter thing that I have.
It's a great We just used it for something else too the other day.
Just kind of like how would you explain it, like two,
sort of like a strap system,
yeah, with the handles on each end, and you just put it around the container. And most of mine stay outside. I they're too big to move. I don't get the dirt out of them. Now they're frozen solid. And you know,
I just, they crack, and when you pay that much money for those big beautiful glazed ones. And the other thing I did is I have a big red Abyssinian banana, an ornamental banana that was in the front garden this year, and this is its third year. And all I do, I cut all the leaves off of the plant, every single leaf off the plant. It's probably maybe 2 feet wide now. I dig it up out of the garden, and the root system is really shallow, and it's not extensive. It's not fibrous. It's sort of these big, thick roots, but they're really close to the surface. So I dig them out. And I just lifted it, carried it, put it in the garage in a tub, like one of those big plastic tubs that I throw my weeds in, put it in the garage, shoved it in the back corner of the garage, and it'll sit there the whole winter. Just with no soil on the roots, nothing, just completely dormant. And this is the third year that I've done it. And it was really heavy because it was so waterlogged because it had just rained. But that water is going to be what, you know, sees it through the winter. So that'll be in storage now for winter. And I'm glad I'll hopefully get a fourth year out of that. Such a great plant.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, get right to your phone calls. Congratulations to Jane from Glenshaw, winner of that gift certificate from Sorgles. All right, here we go, folks. Anita in McKeesport up first for Doug and Jess. Good morning, Anita.
Good morning. I think we already got that cold from Siberia last week. but anyway, I've got seeds from Denise a few years ago for zinnias, and I planted them this year, and they turned out beautiful. They were like 3-4 feet tall.
All right, we lost that phone call. Let's go to Jim in Wexford. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good. I have about 8 or 10 small trees, sapling size, you know, 3 foot tall. And I have them in plastic pots, trying to get roots established, probably put them in a crown, and they froze solid on me. Would that kill them or damage the roots?
What kind of tree was it?
They're a red bud, crab apple, those kind of little saplings, dogwood, small dogwoods, maybe 3 foot tall.
Yeah, so they would survive a few frosts in the pot like that, but for the long term, for the winter, you're really going to want to get them insulated a little better than that. So at this point, you could plant them in the ground, or you can sink the pots down into the ground as if you were planting them. And actually, a great place to do that is if you have a compost pile, sink them down into the compost pile, because that compost pile is nice and hot, and it's going to stay warm all winter long. So that would be a good place to sort of, they call that healing them in, so it's sort of temporarily putting them
in. A good day
there.
To do it, you know.
Yeah, this is going to be a great day to do it. Yep.
Get in the soil, and I'd be tempted to plant them. That's what I would want to do. If you're going to dig the holes to heal them in, but either way would work.
Yeah, I don't have a place really to put them all yet. I'm just kind of getting the roots established. But yeah, that's what I did. But they were frozen solid on a pot. Is that still okay?
Yeah, you just want to make sure that you now take the pot, sink the whole plant down into the ground, or sink the pot down into the ground, right up to its upper rim. Yeah. And then you could even lay a couple of like evergreen boughs around the top of the pot a little bit, so that will add a little extra insulation without. It's not like piling mulch on it or anything like that. It'll still let the plant breathe. But that insulation is going to be really, really important to keeping those plants alive through the winter.
Okay, thanks.
You betcha.
All right, let's try Anita again in McKeesport. Hey, Anita, good morning. Welcome back.
Oh, so much for a cell phone. I'm on my landline.
There you go. Now we can hear
much
you.
Much better.
Perfect.
Much better. So we got that it was zinnias, and you got the seeds from Denise. And how tall are they?
They're like, they grew 3-4 feet high, and they were pink, yellow, orange, beautiful. They were, and I can't remember the name of them. I didn't save the packet. And they were award-winning zinnias, and, oh, they were absolutely beautiful. And should I, you know, pull them out now that they're frozen, and can I save the flower heads, and how would I make seeds?
Yeah, I would definitely save the seeds. If you had
how would I do that?
Yeah, so the flower heads, actually zinnias are one of the easiest ones to save. So today when it's nice outside, we have beautiful weather. Cut off some of the seed heads, and I would just lay them on a piece of newspaper somewhere in a dry room in your house, and just let them sit there and let the seed head fully dry. So it might be 2-3 weeks that it sits like that. And then you can, after that point, you can kind of crack them apart, and they'll fall apart real easily, and you'll see the seeds. They almost look like little winged pieces of brown like craft paper, and they've got little wings on them. So that would be the way to save them, and then separate them out from the rest of the, you know, dead part of the seed head. And I would let them sit out another week or so, and then I would pack them up. And I'd pack them up either in a, umbrella envelope, or like a little glass jar or something
umbrella.
Like that.
Or an umbrella would work.
Umbrella envelope, same thing.
Could they be hybrid though? That's what.
Yeah, they will. They'll be sort of like a natural hybrid. They won't be exactly the same as the parent plant because they do cross pollinate a little bit. But they'll still probably be really good. Like a lot of zinnias will naturally cross like that, but you'll still get cool projects.
I'm just guessing that might be an AAS winner, and
yeah.
See there's some F1 zinnias, so
yeah.
That's
yeah.
All.
Yeah.
Maybe Denise could call later and mention it.
Yeah, if she knows a variety, I'm sure she'll be happy to tell us what it is. But and I'm sure it's an AHS winner as well, because I believe she gets a lot of seeds like that mm-hmm. to give out. So so stay tuned. Keep listening. Maybe she'll come on and might have a suggestion as to that variety.
Cecilia in Cranberry. Hey, Cecilia.
Good morning. So speaking of cleaning up pots, I had an ornamental sweet potato in one of my pots. And when I was cleaning it out, I actually got a couple of nice sweet potatoes. Now, before I poisoned my husband with these, are they actually edible?
Your husband is not going to want to eat them. They are edible, but they don't taste good at all. They're not the same sweet potato as the sweet potatoes that we buy at the grocery store to eat or that you grow to eat. They are ornamental. They have a very bland, boring taste.
But she could save them, right?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
You could save them to plant next year.
Save them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yep.
Really?
Yeah. So you treat them like you would treat a dahlia tuber or a canna tuber. You know, brush off all the soil, let them sit out for a couple of days to dry. And then I use peat moss. I think Doug uses vermiculite.
Vermiculite.
Yeah. And you just pack them in a layer of that, put them in a cardboard box, and you can keep them all winter and replant them in the spring.
Just put the whole tuber in the spring.
You can, or you can treat it as if it were, like, when you do regular sweet potatoes, they usually will cut the potato in half and prop it up in water, and then the sprouts that come off of them, they call them slips, and you cut the sprout off of the potato, and then you plant that. So you could do that and get a lot more plants from that one tuber, from one or two tubers, because it will have eyes, just like a regular potato has eyes, and they'll sprout. So you can get more plants that way. But that, if that seems too complicated for you, you can just plant the whole big tuber.
Oh, awesome. That's better than feeding that to my husband.
Yeah, definitely, because then you get more plants. And what could be better than more plants?
Hi. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Did you ever grow sweet potatoes?
I tried it 1 year. I did not have good luck, but I also think I probably didn't do the best variety. I needed to do a variety that was shorter season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering, when we were talking about deer, I saw you had a story about chronic wasting disease, and like if a deer comes through your garden and leaves its, what it leaves, Is there an issue there as far as disease is concerned?
Yeah. Deer poop, you mean? Is that what you were
trying to elegantly
a Sunday morning during breakfast say?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And that was a question that I often get from readers, and they want to know, you know, is that deer poop safe to have in the garden? Is there a chance, especially if it's in a vegetable garden, is there a chance that that chronic wasting disease could get to, you know, I could be infected? And the research now is that they don't see a transition to humans, especially not through the waste. Obviously, you don't want to intentionally eat a deer that you know has had chronic, you know, has chronic wasting disease. But even that, eating the meat, there's no like proof that chronic wasting disease is transmitted through that as well. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be careful with deer waste in the garden, because even more important than that are things like E. coli and other pathogens. So if you have deer waste in your vegetable garden, maybe have a separate shovel where you can shovel that and get rid of it. And, you know, that area of the garden, maybe make sure you wash your produce really well that comes out of that spot, because you can get other pathogens that are definitely transmittable to humans.
What are you going to do once and for all with this vegetable garden to keep the deer out?
I don't know. I don't know.
Like deer netting up? Or?
I could, but I don't want to look at that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's almost invisible.
I'd like to find an attractive solution. And actually what I'd like to do is the whole fence around the whole yard.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to make that taller.
Ugh.
But just do an extension, like a like an extension pole, and then just do fishing line.
Okay.
Or in that invisible deer netting. So you're not really, like, you're not looking at it. It doesn't look, my thing is, I want to fence the deer out, but I also don't want it to make like I'm fenced in. I don't want to fence myself
in. Don't fence me in.
Don't fence me in, baby. I'm free range. I don't want it to make it, I don't want to feel fenced in myself. So I don't want to put like a stockade fence around the whole yard, which I know would do the job, but I don't want to do that.
You wouldn't have lasted long in that vegetable garden. I did the story on up in SCI Cambridge Springs, the prison, the women's prison.
Why is that?
30-foot tall race.
Yeah, I definitely would feel
you
fenced,
were fenced
in there.
Then.
Yeah.
You know, you two are not supposed to eat some of those plants that you grow in your garden. Where in the world are you going today? All right, listen, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Lots more with Doug and Jess. We've got some lines available. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. Coming up next hour, your favorite shrimp recipes, fried, scampi, shrimp cocktail, and more on the Coons Cooking Hour. 10th caller right now wins a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's in Clinton at 412-922-1020. Let's say hi to Jeff. Jeff, how you doing? Welcome to the program with Doug and Jess. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind, bud?
We had a butterfly bush, and it was up there in our garden for about 10 years and died of old age. So last year I planted one about 5-6 feet away from where that one was, thinking I probably shouldn't put it in the same place. Was that a good decision? Because it died in February.
They're fickle.
They really are
fickle. Sometimes they'll go longer than 10 years. They'll just go, but then sometimes just boom, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. And I have had the same thing happen to multiple ones that at my house as well, where it'll be just like the plant's healthy and lovely, and we have even a mild winter, and it just dies, or one main big giant branch of it dies. So don't think it's anything to do with your green thumb. There's nothing wrong with your green thumb. I would just make sure that you choose, if you plant another one, it doesn't matter whether you plant it in the same site or not. You can choose to go a few feet away or put it right back down in the same spot. It's just that particular plant, unfortunately.
Yeah, just a butterfly bush is just...
Yeah. Persnickety.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because I left it in the bucket for months in the summer.
Well, that might. You didn't tell us that part.
You brought that up in the beginning.
Wait a minute. It was flourishing in December and January.
Okay. All right.
Well, we'll still say it's not your fault, okay?
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Thanks.
Anytime you leave a plant in a pot for a long period of time like that, you're stressing it out a little bit. So
under investigation, we found out more information.
Right. You want to make sure that you plant it as soon as possible, or even put it into a bigger pot, mm-hmm. right? That's your other choice there.
It was a big pot. It was like 1.5 gallon.
Okay. Well, that's not that big for a butterfly bush. So, you know, they can get to be quite big, and they need a lot of room to grow. So you want to make sure that you get the next one in the ground a little sooner And you know, but still, don't be disappointed a couple of years down the road if you have to replace it again, because that's just the nature of that plant.
That was the kiddie's entertainment system. I mean, he was jumping up trying to catch butterflies.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Yeah.
What other kind of plants could you put in if you didn't want to put in a butterfly bush?
So that's another thing, right? So there's actually quite a bit of controversy around butterfly bushes, because in many states they're actually on the noxious weed list because they self-sow really prolifically and they displace in certain kinds of habitats. They can displace some native plant species. So there's some other alternatives if you're looking for something that attracts just as many butterflies but maybe doesn't have that ability to really reseed everywhere. One of my favorites is the buttonbush, Cephalanthus. And buttonbush gets these round golf ball sized white flowers. And when I had my butterfly bush, the buttonbush actually had more butterflies on it than the butterfly bush.
Does it need a lot of water?
It does. It can.
I see them growing on the side of the lake.
Yep. It's sort of, its native habitat is sort of in wet lowland areas, but I have mine in regular garden soil at the top of a retaining wall, and it does beautifully. And it's a great plant. It's a beautiful plant. And then another one that, although it's an annual, but is just a butterfly magnet as well, is the Mexican sunflower, which is not native to Pennsylvania, but it's an annual plant. It dies in the winter. One of Doug and I, our favorite plants. We talk about this plant all the time.
And mine went crazy this year.
Mine too. 10 feet tall. Huge.
Mine were like 12 and they cracked on themselves. Huge. And everything. I just took them out.
Big, big orange, beautiful flowers. Tithonia is the botanical name for it, or Mexican sunflower.
Easy to grow.
Very easy to grow. Yep.
Diane, Ford City, congratulations. Winner of that gift certificate from Janoski's. Ellie, you're up next. How are you?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes. My mom and I enjoy listening to your show every week. My mom passed away unexpectedly on Halloween.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But my question is it too late to plant perennials like coneflowers and blanket flowers and Asiatic lilies?
You know, it's getting to the end. I'm still putting them in. I still have some left over, so I'm still putting them in. But
yeah,
I'd rather put them in September, but if you didn't get them in, if you have them, and that's the situation I'm in. I've got some anemone left, and I think one other perennial. I'm going to have to stick it in. I don't have any choice, really.
Yeah.
Try today.
Yeah. I mean, if you have them, you have them already, and you just need to plant them still.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's the deal. When you plant this late in the season, the roots are not going to have a chance usually to get established, even though the soil is still warm. They're not going to be able to get established. And so what will happen is when we get these freeze-thaw cycles that Pittsburgh is quite fond of, right? Freeze-thaw, freeze-thaw. It actually can heave the plants up out of the soil. So if you do plant this late in the season, one thing you really should do is take a walk through the garden every couple of weeks through the winter months. And if you notice that, the roots kind of popping up out of the soil surface from the freeze-thaw cycles, just take your foot and kind of step it back down around the plant to push it back down into the soil, and that will help keep those roots from popping up out of the ground. And that's really when you risk harming them, is when they get a solid freeze like that because they've popped up out of the ground.
Okay, thank you. And how late can you plant bulbs?
Till the ground freezes solid.
Okay. Thank you so much. Enjoy your show.
Thank
Have a nice
you.
Day.
Thank you. You too.
Sooner is always better. But if you didn't get it in.
Right. I wouldn't go to the nursery and buy all these plants right now. But if you have them and you need to find it, or in my case, sometimes I put perennials in my big pots. You know, I'll include them in my mixture with annuals. And when I disassemble the pots, I don't want to get rid of those plants. I want to put them in the garden. So if you're in that situation, obviously, then you want to go ahead and either put them in a permanent place and just make sure that you step them in every couple of weeks if they heave up out. Or you can temporarily heel them into the compost pile or maybe somewhere in the vegetable garden and then move them to their permanent home in the spring.
All right. Let's say hi. Up next, it is Nancy, Mount Lebanon. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about wintering over geraniums. First, is it worth it? And if it is, would you do the sunny basement windowsill or the paper bag deal?
Well, this will be interesting. I'll be interested to see what you do. I like to do them as a house plant. Is it worth it? It's worth it if you enjoy doing it. I mean, I actually don't do it anymore. But I used to really like, wow, I can make this thing go all winter long. But do you store them the other way? Do you ever store them the other way?
I've done it both ways. I'm now don't bother with it. I just buy new ones every year.
But I mean, it was fun when we were, you know, when you were doing it.
Oh, yeah, experiment with it. It's kind of cool. And if you have a basement windowsill and the plant's already in a pot, it's not going to hurt anything. Mm-hmm. I'd cut it back significantly when you move it in, because otherwise it's going to get super leggy. And you can, what's even more fun if you do that, when you cut off, when you prune the plant back, you can take all those cuttings and start them in new pots of soil and root them, and then you have a lot more plants for next year. So that's kind of like a fun little green thumb experiment.
And will I get an equal amount of blooms as if I went out and bought a new one next year?
Yeah, and they'll actually probably bloom sooner by doing this, by overwintering, because it's in a more mature state. But most of the geraniums, you know, if we're talking about zonal geraniums, they're started by cuttings, not by seed, when you buy them at the garden center. So they come into bloom, they're usually in bloom when you go and buy them, but you can't buy them until May. Whereas when you overwinter your own, you might actually get a couple blooms indoors before you can move that plant outside.
Yeah, it's fun. Okay. Fun project.
Well, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, good. Why not?
Let us know.
All right, let's go to Marie. Marie from the north side for Doug and Jess, the Organic Gardeners. Hey, Marie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I have these lamb ears. I didn't plant them. They're kind of growing wild on one side of my house. And I only get like 2 to 3 hours of sun on any side of my house. And the side they're growing on, it's the afternoon sun. They're reaching over the driveway and they burn because they're on the concrete. And I don't know if I could dig up the whole clump of them and try to move them now, or wait until the spring. Because I'd like to put them somewhere else, because I don't see them on that side. But I'll leave them there, but I'll have to move them closer to the house, because right now they're on the edge near the driveway. I didn't plant them. They just moved here, you know, 10 years ago. And then I had another question, if you have time.
Sure. If it was me, I would move them in the spring. What do you think, Jess?
Yeah, I'd move them in the spring, too. I think it's a little too late now. Mm-hmm. They're pretty shallow-rooted plants. Although
do they grow in a rocky soil, like a...
Yeah, they would do fine in a more rocky environment here. That would be fine. The thing is, they might still burn out in their new place. That's just one of the things that plant does. Sometimes halfway through the season, or when things start to get real hot, they turn brown and crispy and they just don't look so good. So just because you move it to the new spot doesn't mean that won't necessarily happen in the new spot.
What was your second question?
I have a friend that she's going to be digging up a hillside, and she has all these cactus plants. They're the big flat, they look like big ears. They're flat and they have these bright yellow flowers on them, and they're in full sun and they're going to be destroyed, and I want to move them somewhere, and I don't know what time of year and what kind of soil where they would do best at.
Yeah, so that's a prickly pear cactus.
Full sun.
Oh, Punta.
Full sun, lots of drainage.
Full sun, lots of drainage, and I am telling you, when you move them, you have better have some heavy-duty gloves and long sleeves and be very careful. Because not only do they hurt just like as a temporary little poke, but they leave these little hairs behind in your skin.
It's awful.
That's where I'm getting those at. I couldn't figure out where I'm getting. I was pulling weeds around for her because she's a senior.
Yeah.
And around those plants, and it's like they must fly off.
They do. They do. You don't have to touch it. Yeah, they kind of like a little arrow shooting out at you. And we had one when I was a kid. My mama had one in the front planting bed, and the best hide and seek spot was behind the yew. But in order to get to that yew, you had to walk past the prickly pear.
Don't sit there.
And
prickly pear.
Yeah.
Okay,
and we so just I mean, you know, it's a great plant, but be careful.
Will they survive in like 4 hours sun? Because I get 2 to 4 hours sun because of close to other houses and all the trees.
You'd want more.
Yeah, they'll survive, but they're probably not going to bloom.
You
they're
going to
be real spindly.
Blooms.
Yeah.
How about a big, big pot going across a porch? Or
you could do that, but I'm not sure I'd want them that close to me.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You know what? It would be good for a burglar.
Yeah, or if you have, it's a great plant if you have, a lot of neighborhood dogs that like to, come into your yard.
Walkers,
put them along the edge. the edge of your yard, and the dogs aren't going to cross over it to come in to the yard.
Bed by the sidewalk.
I thought you were going to say neighborhood kids.
No, I don't not the kid. I don't want to hurt a dog though.
Well, they would know. They would know not to touch the plant. Like that's the thing. They're instinctual going to avoid that plant which has the spines. They're not going to ever walk in there to use the bathroom. Like they know. So it's not like it's going to hurt the dog. They just gonna, it's sort of like a prickly plant that they know better than to cross over that barrier. So.
We'll be back.
Time for Mrs. Know-It-All. She's a horticulturist, gardener, and our garden goddess, Denise Schreiber. How are you this morning?
I am sitting here with a blanket on my lap and a cat on top of it, and I'm quite comfy.
I bet. Did you hear that question about somebody who got some zinnia seeds from you?
Yeah. So she didn't specify whether they were the tall zinnias or the short zinnias.
She said tall. She said like four foot tall.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably the series that I get from Renee's, the berry basket, which are the tall cutting ones. And they come in all different colors. You know, so there's pink, there's lavender, there's red, there's an orange in it. You know, zinnias don't hybridize a whole lot, you know, but they will to a certain extent. But, yeah, they're great. And what I like to do with the tall zinnias is to cut them. So, actually, when I'm growing them from seed, I wait till they get their second set of true leaves, and then I cut them right there. And then they branch more, and you get a really sturdy plant, but you get tons more flowers. So the more you cut the taller zinnias, the more flowers you're going to have all season long, and they really keep on going until the very end of the season.
Where were you giving those away at?
I've been to many places.
All right. I would thought it might be a certain event or something, but boy, Anita sure loved those flowers.
Yeah, you cannot fall in love with them.
Yeah.
You know, the berry basket series is absolutely one of my favorite zinnias.
And it's great. And Renee's, I know, does a lot of combination seed packets like that, which is really cool, where you have, instead of having to buy a separate seed packet of each variety, it's the colors already mixed together from seed in the packet, which, and she even does that with, like, her lettuce blends and things like that. And for the vegetable garden, sometimes you can get three different types of tomato seed in one packet, and then they're all color-coded. And so then you can tell, like, the blue seeds are this variety of tomatoes. And I think that's kind of cool for home gardeners, because then that lets you try different varieties with only having to buy one seed pack.
Yeah, that's a nice seed company.
Yeah, it is.
All right, right back to the phones. It's Paris, Pennsylvania, and Bill is on the air with Doug and Jeff, the Organic Gardeners. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're doing good. What's going on? Go ahead.
You had the yellow oxheart tomato seeds.
Mm-hmm.
How did that work out?
They were okay. Not great. Did you get them?
How about the orange?
I don't remember. I remember what was it called? Howard's? I can't remember.
I couldn't read your writing on the tag.
That's no surprise.
Well, anyway, overall, I thought it was the best tomato season that I've ever seen. Matter of fact, I probably have maybe close to a bushel all wrapped up in newspaper. And that seems to be working out fine, but I have never seen tomatoes grow as big and as many of them as long as I've grown tomatoes, and that's a good while.
I had a great year, too. Did you grow that one, that yellow oxheart?
I tried them, but my seed didn't come up. The orange oxhearts, which is by far my favorite tomato, and I've tried them all. That tomato, well, they were outstanding, and the size of them was unbelievable.
Okay, so I remember now. The orange oxheart did good for me. In fact, all my oxheart varieties did great this year. And in fact, I don't think I had too many that did bad. Did you get a lot of blight, Jess?
Me? I did towards the end of the... Actually, it was not right at the end. It was sort of in the middle of the season after we had that really long wet period. But then once it dried out, then it sort of stopped progressing. So
Bill,
it wasn't as bad as I thought.
I had no blight, and I have just never seen tomatoes do as well. Matter of fact, people, I bet you I gave five bushel of them away.
Wow.
People just they really enjoy it. And you know, it's enjoyable to see people that don't grow that stuff to have some on their plate. So it all worked out good. But I just wondered how the yellow ones worked out for you.
Yeah, not great. The orange was great. What else do you really like to grow tomato-wise? What's another favorite of yours?
I like your potato top.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. A minister's wife gave me the seed. She didn't have any place to put them anymore, and I always said she must have blessed them because they do very well also. And I like a lot of the small tomatoes. I like the yellow, the small yellow pear ones. I like the black beauties. I like them a lot also. There's just so many good ones anymore. It's hard to pick one, but the orange by far is my favorite and also my neighbor's, I guess. But it's just an amazing year for tomatoes as far as I could see. And I did hear a lot of complaints,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of shocked me.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did have fungal issues and blight issues.
I heard a lot of people
especially
struggled.
If you put the plants so close together that it doesn't allow them to dry off. They don't get good air circulation. So having proper spacing is really, really important.
And you stake yours, right?
I do stake mine, and I prune them really heavily as well, which I know you don't do in yours.
I cage them, but I do want distance between them.
Yeah, it's really important. But you know what? And he is right. The joy of sharing a homegrown mm-hmm. tomato with mm-hmm. someone who either can't grow them on their own or doesn't want to grow them on their own, it really is a fun thing to be able to share those.
It's usually the guy at work that says, I don't grow tomatoes. I could get them down at the store for 20 cents. And then when you bring them in and put them on the thing,
no,
he's
the first
guy running over. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What was your best tomato this year?
My favorite, pineapple.
But did you get pineapple?
I did get a pineapple. I thought for a while there that I didn't because one of them was mislabeled, but I had two plants. One did turn out to be pineapple and one was some other thing. And Berkeley tie-dye. I really liked that one too.
Mm.
Did you ever grow Berkeley tie-dye?
No, I've seen it though.
All right.
Remember,
one.
The organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
Guys, thank you so much. Always a joy. Thank you. They'll be back with you next week. Now we're going to get into the kitchen and do some shrimp recipes with you on the Coons Cooking Hour. So if you have a favorite shrimp recipe, I highly urge you to give us a call at 866-391-1020. Some lucky listener going to take home a $25 gift certificate from the folks at Coons Market. There is one near you. 8 o'clock news, just minutes away. Rob Pratt Sunday, KDK Radio.